You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Welcome back to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. This is Tariq Youssef.
And I'm Hannah McGee. And Tariq, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Okay, I was just eating Triscuits. Do you like Triscuits?
Yeah, I like that they're... I very rarely have a lot of salt on something, and Triscuits really hit you. You know what I mean? And sometimes that can be fun once in a while.
Agreed. They are salty. Like, but not like they, I was actually looking
You can have at, a few. Like, you don't, you can't, yeah. Like, you can eat more than one for sure.
Yeah.
Salty that it's like disgusting.
Yeah. Or salty that it's like unhealthy, I would say. I mean, I was looking at the nutrition facts label. Anyways, now I'm just going on a tangent already. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah.
But they have, I think it's like 10% of the daily value of sodium, recommended sodium per serving, which isn't too bad. They say that 15% is considered a lot and 5% is considered a
little. And what's a serving, like 30 grams probably?
A serving is like 4 or 5 crackers.
Yeah.
But I usually eat about 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah. You're not an animal. Yeah.
No, of course. Anyways, I just was thinking when I was eating them that I used to hate them as a kid. Like, I thought they were the most boring crackers.
It is the adult cracker.
Like, okay, maybe that's what it is. Like, my mom would break out the Triscuits and I'd be like, oh, here we go again.
Because kids crackers are like goldfish. Like, I can't even think of it. Or like Ritz crackers. That's all
Ritz
I can think
crackers,
of.
Yeah. I used to love those. And now, though, I have embraced the Triscuit. I love Triscuits. I
think they're my favorite. And they hit you with that herb and rose, like the herb and olive
the flavored
oil.
They
hit
ones.
You
with it. Yeah.
There is a sweet potato one that really gets me going.
You know what? This just makes you. This makes me feel a little bit old now that you said they're an adult cracker. I've been having a crisis lately, and I feel really old.
I want people to know that a lot just happened off the podcast. So we're coming in hot right now.
We are coming in hot. Yeah. Anyways, I'm having a midlife crisis. I love Triscuits.
Yeah, exactly. We're losing it.
And that's the end.
But we're all going to collectively come back together for what I hope is going to be a fun segment, Hannah.
Yeah, I'm really excited to hear what you've got for our BS of the week this week. So take it away.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So I ran into an article that had something to do with spinach being really good for your vision. I was like, oh, I study vision science. Let me look into this and see what's going on. It was a list of like, that vision thing was like number 8 on a list of whatever, 12 things about spinach.
Okay.
And the article was called Secret Side Effects of Eating Spinach. I got to number 1 and I already was like, well, I can't even read the other ones because there's enough here to just like, I can go absolutely off on what's happening. It also like makes me think about a couple things. You'll see the link in the description. The website is called Eat This, Not That. Have you ever been on this website?
Oh my God.
Exactly. But the other thing is, it's called Eat This, Not That, weird diet culture-y, wellness culture title. But also, it's one of those quote-unquote health websites that has those check marks that says it's fact-checked by people and it's like validated by people.
Oh, interesting. But,
so there's already like, we were almost saved for like 5 minutes. Like, oh, science communication. Like now we're getting things validated by people. There's like a check mark that somebody looked at this and made sure it was okay. But now that somebody can be anybody. And it kind of was in this scenario. So anyway, it like puts more, we're wading through the muck of bad science communication all over again. Because it's like quote unquote fact checked by someone. And also, it's one of those things that, like, sure, you can still be telling the truth about a scientific study, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's applicable. This is actually a concept that people in science, like through your undergrad, people have a lot of trouble with. They'll find a statistically significant effect in their study. But let's say it's a clinically related project or something that's translatable to human health science. Just because there was a difference between one group and another, say a treatment for a tumor worked better in one group than another based on the statistics, that margin of a difference might be statistically significant, but it might not be clinically applicable.
Mm.
So that kind of thing definitely translates to a lot of the science communication, health communication, nutrition communication that's out there, right? So it is a really difficult thing because people might come back and say, well, it's true. That's what the study said. Even if it was a quote unquote a good study at a good university or whatever, like that's fine. But the relevance of that finding might be different than just like, okay, this happened in the study, so it's true, and now we can move forward with our lives. So This article was just published actually on the 20th. So when we're recording this was like just under a week ago. And the great tagline, if you want to live a longer, healthier life, read on to discover the secret side effects of eating spinach according to science. So I was like, I was getting ready to dig right in to the vision one. But as soon as I scrolled, number one, the title was You May Lose Weight. So I was like, oh my God, like I have to stop right here already. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like, okay, bye.
Yeah, I couldn't even read the rest of the article. So they're citing this article found in a journal called Appetite. It was a study conducted in 2014. Already, here's a problem, which definitely like I've been guilty of in the past. They're citing one article, right? Like This is one article that found one finding in their own specific situation.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
not enough to go on for changing a behavior that you think is going to produce some sort of effect in your body.
Yeah.
So this study... they used a group of 38, what they described as overweight women going off BMI. So again, a low number of people. And they were either given a beverage that contained a spinach extract or a placebo. So just water. So those people that were given a spinach extract, they say experienced up to a 95% reduction in food cravings. And they lost 43% more weight than the members of the control group during the study period. Now, all of that, I will say, is, sure, quote-unquote, technically true based on the findings that they provide. But it is so warped, Hannah, the way that they're describing their findings and the way that the results are not interpreted, but the way that they're presenting bits and pieces and they're showing you bits and pieces without like the full context, right?
Yeah.
So here's a quote from the article. Subjects receiving green plant membranes. So basically they were breaking down spinach in order to take advantage of the fact they say that chlorophyll, you know, what thing that makes plants green. People remember that from biology class. It also allows plants to make use of light in order to be able to create sugars for the plant to subsist. They say that there's something in chlorophyll, the components of chlorophyll complexes help. There's evidence that they might promote satiety hormones. They might cut cravings. And there's also evidence that they might reduce the speed with which fat is metabolized. Therefore, allowing fat to be digested more slowly and, you know, digested more thoroughly and therefore less fat gain or adipose tissue addition. So this is like their whole background from a few small studies on animals that, you know, found links to these things, which I'm not saying isn't true, but is it clinically relevant?
Yeah.
So they found, they say that mean weight loss with the green plant extract was 5 kilograms compared to 3.5 kilograms in the control group. So, okay, there's a 1.5 kilogram difference, and this is a 90-day study. Is this clinically relevant? If it was maybe 5% of somebody's body weight, I mean, there's evidence to suggest that that might help people who have symptoms of diabetes, some other symptoms of high cholesterol, for example. Some cardiovascular symptoms are shown to be ameliorated with 5% weight loss. We've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But is that a clinically relevant difference? So the other thing is, when they said earlier, 43% more weight, in your mind, that's like, oh my gosh, that's like, they lost almost 50% more weight than the other people. The difference was 1.5 kilograms over 90 days. 90 days is both a long time and a short time. So it's a long time in the sense that they're kind of making a big deal out of this 1.5 kilograms over the 90 days. But it's a short time in the sense that, well, okay, well, we have no idea if this 1.5 kilogram of weight loss is sustainable long term. We know that weight loss is possible over a period of a few months, sure.
Yeah.
But we also know that most of that weight loss, if it doesn't have to do with like true behavioral changes, and it just has to do with a supplement or calorie restriction, it usually ends up bouncing back.
Yeah.
Right. So the other thing too is, they don't really advertise this in huge, big, bold letters, but there were no differences between the groups in waist circumference, body fat, or leptin. Both groups experienced decreases in these values, but there was no difference between either group.
Interesting.
So they both, presumably, whatever, had the same result or the same experiences throughout the course of the study, but somehow they're still hanging on with dear life to this 1.5 kilogram difference and calling it a 43% reduction.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a lot of cherry picking here, I would say, in how they're describing the effects of the study. And of course, this has translated into how that study gets communicated on in a popular way, right? On this article on Eat This, Not That. I can't believe that's a website. So it's interesting also. So there's no differences in these groups, and it's such a small difference in weight loss. Okay, so if we were to look at the actual weights of the people starting in both groups and ending in both groups, it also makes us a little bit more suspect of, sure, maybe there's a difference, but is it a clinically relevant one? So that the control group started at 80 kilograms on average. Those 19 people in the control group were on average 80 kilograms. The experimental group, on average, they were 79.9 kilograms. This is great, actually, because we're starting off from the same point and we want to be able to compare. I mean, we could compare based on percentages, but it's nice to know that people are at a similar baseline in both groups. They ended up at, so the control group ended up at 76 kilograms, and the experimental group ended up at 75 kilograms, give or take a few point whatevers of a kilogram. And this is where that 1.5 kilogram difference between the groups and the 43% reduction that they're harping on about comes from. So looking at all of the numbers a little bit more closely makes me think, okay, again, this is true, but they're ending up, they started in identical places and they're ending up in near identical places.
Yeah.
No differences in waist circumference. Why are we so hung up on this difference? Like, shouldn't we be looking at this a bit more deeply, or maybe wondering if that effect really is a true and relevant one?
Mm-hmm.
They also had some cholesterol data. So obviously there were some differences between the groups, but there was never a difference throughout the course of the study. So the very minor changes that happened weren't relevant either between the groups or within the groups themselves over the 90 days. So it's almost as if both groups had kind of different cholesterol levels from the beginning of the experiment, and they just like stayed that way.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to, like, you know, I'm not the arbiter final of all of this. So I kind of wanted to see what other studies said. It's been 2014. So I thought there probably would have been a few citations.
Yeah.
There was one from this year, 2021. They say that they actually grouped this study in a larger analysis of other studies looking at green plants, including green tea, and weight loss. And they said only 2 of 16 studies, one of those two being the one that I just talked about, demonstrated statistically significant improvements in weight ranging from 1.5 to 1.7 kilograms, both of which lasted less than 8 weeks. So again, even this study that's kind of looking at the group analysis of all of these studies looking at green plant extracts and weight loss is calling out a sustainability issue when they're comparing these findings to the rest of the literature. Right. There's another review as well from 2020. Again, all these links will be in the description for, I'm assuming, the dietitian students who are writing a paper about this. another paper that said, They say, in conclusion, our results may approve this postulation that receiving a thylakoid-enriched, thylakoid is part of that chlorophyll complex that I was talking about in green plants, meal can decrease appetite and probably food intake in the short term. However, more studies are needed to explore the effects of long-term supplementation with thylakoids on weight loss in human subjects.
Right.
So they say also, whether these appetite-lowering effects of thylakoids could be a useful strategy in controlling obesity in the long term is still ambiguous. More studies are needed to investigate the effects of long-term supplementation with thylakoids on weight loss in human subjects. So all to say, once we actually dig deep down, this number one tip on eat this, not that, about the secret side effects of spinach that you might lose weight has no ground to stand on.
Literally none. Like, that is so silly. And it really just goes to show that these, like, diet sites, there's so many of them out there, like, you know, whether it's Eat This, Not That, or I don't know, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but when you Google,
thank,
like,
goodness,
you know, what food is, you know, is spinach or is cucumber good for you, or like, will oranges help you lose weight or whatever, like those stupid articles on those stupid websites that say, like, studies show that it does, like, a lot of times it's like you're saying, it's just like one cherry-picked study that's very poorly, in quotes, proving that, like, this point or this thing that you're questioning.
And then kind of like, even though it's, these findings are reported the way that they were in the study, we're not really talking about whether these findings are applicable or clinically relevant at all.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Which is, that's like a really hard thing to even, like, people get really excited in science, like, oh my gosh, I found a difference. Like, you know, going through, writing lab reports and stuff like that. It's like, oh my gosh, there's a difference between the groups. Okay. Sometimes I'm like, but... I mean, graph the data points. Both groups' data points kind of like are in the same range.
Yeah.
Maybe there's a statistically significant difference because of the test that you chose, but
how
well does that hold up if you increase your numbers?
Right.
Or if you were to go to translate this into a different model, like in a complex human, for example.
Yeah, really interesting. I also wanted to say, this is kind of on another note, but it's related to Eat This, Not That. And when you said eatthisnotthat.com and I said, oh my God, it's because, well, one, I mean, it's just a totally, in my opinion, like, stupid organization or brand or whatever. I don't know if you've seen, but I think before they had this site, they had books. They had these Eat This, Not That books.
Oh, really? Okay.
Did you ever see them? They were like,
no.
I would say I first picked one up when I was probably 13 or 14. And let me tell you, these books totally contributed to my eating disorder / disordered eating habits. I would like flip through these books. I would ask for them for Christmas in my stocking. They had like different editions, like restaurant edition or like fast food edition or like Eat This, Not That. And it would compare like the healthiest options at certain restaurants, like eat this salad with whatever, and but not that, like
chicken wrap. We tried the Boston Pizza garden salad.
Yeah.
But don't eat the fettuccine Alfredo.
Exactly. It was all like, don't eat the Applebee's.
Get this dressing on the side.
Yep, exactly. It was, and it would just tell you like the calories and the fat and whatever in each dish, and not each dish, but it would just basically show you like the worst quote, worst dish at each restaurant, like with the most calories or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the one with basically the least that you should eat. And oh my God, it absolutely contributed to my huge fear of like eating out at restaurants and ordering food and things like that, because I was like, oh, there's so much calories or so many calories or so much fat in this one thing. And anyways, so I just like, that was when you said eat this, not that, I was like, oh my God. Yeah.
Instant flashbacks.
can't trust them.
They're a bit. Yeah. So I don't know, folks, if you find yourself going through the produce aisle and really thinking hard about thylakoids and whether or not they really do slow the production of leptin down, and or they promote the production of leptin and they also slow down the digestion of fat, I would say just throw that out of your head and just pick up the spinach if you really want it.
Yeah, maybe eat spinach for other reasons, but yeah. It's really not convincing at this point that spinach alone is going to help you lose weight. Spinach and spinach alone.
Absolutely. And until next time, I would say thank you so much for listening. Give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Spotify. DM us. Call someone. Call a friend. Say hi to someone you haven't spoken to in a long time.
And let them know about the podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. Well, thank you, Tarek. That was fabulous. And we will talk to you guys on Friday.
Bye.